Hi, everybody. There's a lot going on this week, and we want to get right into talking about the lame duck here in Michigan, where Republicans have decided that, they don't really care what the voters think or what the voters have to say about how government should be run, and they think they know how to do it better than all the rest of us, despite, for example, Proposition 2, which is redistricting passing by more than 60% voter approval, for example. They're trying to make changes to that that bill and a whole slew of others. There's something like 30 bills that they're trying to push through the lame duck where they can't be held directly accountable because we already voted. So I'm here with Zach Reinhart, one of the folks behind Millennials for Revolution, and Kelly Collison, currently the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party Progressive Caucus.
Thanks for having me.
And so what do you guys think? Have you what have you seen from the legislature this past week?
A mess.
Yeah, it's been like one bill after another that just completely undermines democracy, undermines the voters, which obviously, as you stated, had just voted. And it wasn't like these were close votes. These weren't 51, 52% votes. These were 70-plus votes. And they completely ignoring the will of the voters.
Yeah, and by the way, they've had the legislature this past election. Republicans, despite the fact that they're going to retain majority control of both houses of the legislature, actually in aggregate lost the popular vote in both houses of the legislature by hundreds of thousands of votes. Mm-hmm. So not only have they been voted out of office already, so these are already people, a number of them aren't coming back, but their colleagues who have been voted in for the next term are a minority party. Mm-hmm. They're not, they don't represent the majority of voters, I think it was something by around a 5% margin or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like I said, hundreds of thousands of votes. So what is it that, you know, when we hear, I hear Republicans talk all the time about, you know, the Constitution and the rule of law and all of this. And when it actually comes to living up to that, what they'd rather do is keep power that the voters haven't given them. So, I mean, it just seems ridiculous to me. How do Republicans continue to claim that they believe in democracy or that they believe in representative government when they're not willing to accept the judgment of the people?
Well, I think that comes down to the fact that often one of the tactics used by the Republican parties is to present themselves in the opposite of what they are and paint their enemies as what they are. So, for instance, one of the big things that Republicans were complaining about going into the election was election fraud. Mm-hmm. And as we're starting to see down in North Carolina's 9th district,
sure,
they are actually committing election fraud. Right. So, like, the thing with the Republicans is they're always trying to paint their enemies with a brush that more closely matches themselves.
So let's talk about that. Just the election fraud down in the North Carolina 9th. So what apparently happened is that there's the Republican candidate who you know, on election day won by something like just over 900 votes. Mm-hmm. in a pretty big district in North Carolina. So that's a very small percentage. Had operatives that were going around and collecting absentee ballots and not delivering them. Mm-hmm. Or possibly, this has been reported, I haven't seen this confirmed, but not delivering them to the election office or tampering with them in a way that would ensure that once they were delivered, they didn't actually get counted. So it's literally ripping people's voices from their throats, so to speak, in a democracy, and these are the people that want to lecture folks about voter fraud and all of this, where they when we can't we did the, like we've seen studies on voter fraud over a I think it was a 14-year period, 2000 or 2001 through 2014, where they looked at like billions of votes, and they found 31 cases of the kind of voter fraud that might be affected by an ID law. But on the other hand, you've got Republicans. Actually, one of the key things is that the Republican who supposedly won that race by that slim margin was paying the people that went around and robbed people of their votes like that.
Yeah, correct. And he won 95, I think it was 95% or 90 plus for sure of the absentee ballots. So, I mean, right. Like, what are the chances, you know?
Right. So, you know, in a close race like that.
Exactly. Make all the difference.
Right. Which, well, and tells you it was that close after they already took those ballots away. So mm-hmm. The question is, you know, what would it have actually been? But even so, I don't think there's any way to know. So the point that I want to keep focused on though is that we have a concerted effort in this country, and it's not just on the local level like what we're seeing in North Carolina and Wisconsin and Michigan. It's also on the federal level, like what Mitch McConnell did with Merrick Garland. Mm-hmm. I would even say what the Republicans in Congress did with the Kavanaugh hearings. It's not about what the people want. It's about what they can get away with, mm-hmm. and it's about using the laws to try to perpetuate minority rule in this country, which we've had since the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about being a democracy, but I've said many times on this program before, the system is set up to ensure minority rule, and it does that in a number of ways, originally going back to, you couldn't even vote unless you were white, male, wealthy, and owned land. Now what we have is the rump end of that white, male, wealthy cadre that are still holding on to power with their fingernails in the state legislatures only because they've gerrymandered them to the point that the majority can't elect the representatives that they want, and they're saying we still have to hold on to power even though the majority of people are against us.
Yeah, and then on the federal level, we have two out of the last five presidents, 40% of our presidents not being elected by the popular will of people.
Right.
So yeah, it's definitely something that goes up and down the ballot. And it's continuing to be, like I said, Republicans undermining democracy every chance and opportunity they get.
So, how do you guys think we're going to be able to overcome all this obstruction coming from the GOP? Because we have ballot initiatives that we keep pushing through. Mm-hmm. And what happens? We have lame duck sessions that gut them. So even if we do a ballot initiative to end lame duck, mm-hmm. what difference does that make if it's not enacted immediately, which we have to wait for the Board of Canvassers to certify everything? So who's to say that they just don't pass a bunch of stuff before that happens? So like the Prop 1 didn't get certified until yesterday. Happy legalization day after.
Yeah. Happy legalization day, everybody. It was a great party in Detroit, let me tell you.
Yeah. Thanks to the City Pulse in Lansing for handing out free joints outside City Hall yesterday. That was cool.
That's kind of cool. I did not know that was happening. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
We have all of these ballot initiatives that people work their butts off for. Mm-hmm. We had, I mean, Prop 2 was one amazing example of that with volunteers. It was completely volunteer done, led, mm-hmm. and that passed with an overwhelming majority. But if it gets gutted by our lame duck legislators, mm-hmm. then
right.
what's the point of even, what is the point of voting? What's the point of doing a ballot initiative? What's the point of even participating in our fake democracy that we have here in America?
Well, so actually, I think that's the Prop 2 is a really, really interesting point. So first of all, it passed 61-39, so overwhelming support. Mm-hmm. Okay, in one of the highest turnout elections that we've had in the midterms, I don't know if this is specifically in Michigan, but I saw a report that was like 100 years since we've had the kind of turnout that we've had in a midterm. But here's the thing about Prop 2. Prop 2 specifically says First of all, there's a provision of the Michigan Constitution that says that we're allowed to do ballot initiatives like this so that people can amend the Constitution directly, specifically because we didn't want to leave that in the hands of just the legislators.
Right.
Okay. So using that provision of the Constitution, the people of Michigan, by an overwhelming majority, passed these changes to reform the election laws, to get rid of partisan gerrymandering, which is the only reason that any of these people are currently in power at all, because they've lost repeatedly the popular vote of the last three elections. Last four elections, including this one, they've lost the popular vote three times, and one year they barely eked it out by 3,000 votes. Across the whole state, and on aggregate, for the legislature. So they don't want to let the people amend the Constitution to prevent them from gerrymandering the districts to the point that the majority can't elect the representative that they want. So they're explicitly saying, we want minority rule and we're going to fight for it. Okay. And just think about this scenario. So this bill that they've passed that modifies the Constitution in a section of it that specifically says the legislature can't, because we passed the bill. The people passed the bill. It's part of the Constitution now. Okay? They're going to take that in front of a judge, and they're going to say, the legislature or the people? Because that's what they're asking. They're going to be asking the judge, because this is going to get challenged in court. And the question before the judge is going to be, does the legislature have the power to overrule the will of the people in modifying their constitution? Or do the people have the right to modify our constitution, according to the system laid out in the Constitution specifically for doing that? Okay. Now the question is, what do you think? Do you think they've used that gerrymander that's given them the power that they've had in such a way that that with appointments and midterm appointments for judges and stuff like that that the courts are packed sufficiently, that there's a court that's going to say, yep, the people don't get a voice and the legislature gets to decide what the Constitution says?
I guess we'll see. I mean, I hope that we don't have a situation similar to what they had in Pennsylvania, where they did do that. They brought the redistricting to the courts, and the courts ruled that the gerrymandering that the Republicans were doing was unconstitutional. And then that legislature actually tried to impeach those mm-hmm. Supreme Court justices.
Right.
So, I mean, like, they will stop at no bounds. And that was a Republican Supreme Court. So, I mean, like,
sure,
it could be against their own. I mean, it's just, like, basically hold on to power any way possible. I mean, it's something you'd see in dictatorships and in strong authoritarian regimes. So,
right. Well,
I don't think they'll give up. They'll go down fighting.
So I mean, Kelly, you asked, how are we gonna stop this? The first answer is this ought to be stopped in the courts. The courts ought to look at this and go, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Mm-hmm. Okay, this literally says you don't get to do this, and you're trying to do this anyway. The stuff where they're trying to take power away from the governor, or from the attorney general, or for the secretary of state to oversee elections specifically, for example. I mean, so what they're saying is that they can't win on their arguments. Let's just be clear here. What this lame duck is a gigantic white flag of surrender on the issues, because they can't win that way.
Right.
What issues
do they stand for?
Right.
Taking away women's rights, or hating people because of who they love or who they are? Mm-hmm. Or is it just making sure that rich people are taken care of while the poor continues to suffer and grow?
Right. Well, and I mean, consider, when some of the things that they're talking about changing in Prop 1, marijuana legalization. They're talking about making it illegal to grow plants at home, which is one of the things that's specifically in the ballot initiative that passed, again, by 56% of the
vote. Interesting, because the government or the party of we don't want government in our homes telling us what we can do is trying to tell people what they can do in their homes.
So. Right. Well, and let's be clear. What it's about is they're perfectly fine with marijuana legalization or criminalization, so long as somebody's making money over it. When it's criminalized, you've got the prison industrial complex that's making money off of it, so they're happy with that because they get donors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now that legalization passed, what they're trying to do is they're trying to take away the ability of individual people to grow their own or to have small micro businesses, which is also part of that Prop 1. And why are they doing that? They're doing that so that the business opportunities that are generated stay in the hands of the people that have the money to operate much larger enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, by the way, that reduces competition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's interesting. If you look at, there's an article in Bloomberg. Okay, Bloomberg. This is a capitalist. Right wing in terms of economics and so on publication, and they just had an article a day or two ago that said, I don't remember exactly how they put it, but basically what they said is that the lack of competition is killing capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the modifications to this Prop 1 that the Republicans in Michigan are trying to do is they're trying to reduce competition so that their donors can have really big businesses and control that industry. And Bloomberg is out, like I said, with this article that's saying it's precisely that kind of thinking that's destroying capitalism and creating huge wealth inequality. Lots of other problems with Bloomberg, lots of other problems with their analysis, but that part of it, as long as you're thinking in this capitalist way about how markets and competition work, they're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't have that kind of competition, prices go up and you have massive inequality because only a few people can actually operate those businesses.
Yeah, back in the Gilded Age again. Yeah. Kind of seems like that's where we're going.
So, but we still haven't. We've beat that a little bit, but we haven't gotten to, how are we going to stop it?
I think one of the important things is making sure that when we do get these ballot initiatives, that they actually find their way onto the ballot, because they are trying to make changes to Proposal 1, 2, and 3, but the changes that they're trying to make are much harder because they need supermajorities to do so. Whereas the other proposals, like paid sick leave and one fair wage, mm-hmm. They were able to pass earlier in the year, and now they can change those at will, and obviously they're gutting them completely. So I think making sure that our ballot proposals never make their way to the legislature and actually go to the ballot as intended is one of those ways. And then, unfortunately, the only other way is getting people outside and activated and protesting and making sure that their voices are heard and again, I guess.
Well, the thing is, what it is actually, I think one of the things I think we have to do is we have to be making the case to all of the people that typically don't vote, and because a lot of them don't vote because they don't feel like it makes a difference. I mean, that's a big reason that people don't vote, and we need to use this as an opportunity to make the argument: voting matters. They're showing you right now that voting matters, because if voting didn't matter, they wouldn't be able to change. They wouldn't be trying to change the things that voters put through.
Right.
And we're right now we're at the precipice of being able to cross over and start actually having, Democratic representatives that actually have the support of the people and not just a minority of the people. Not just the minority of the 1%, really. because that's in a large sense, that's what we're talking about, because these people are serving their donors, not necessarily. I mean, the things that they're doing aren't good for their everyday constituents either.
I mean, with those percentages that the props passed, it's very clear that they weren't just voted on by Democrats. I mean, there's a number of Republicans that are voting for these bills as well.
Absolutely. And in fact, I've made the point on this show before that that every one of the three props, 1, 2, and 3, passed with higher by higher margins than any statewide candidate of either party. The best performing statewide candidate on the Republican side this time was James, running against Stabenow, and he lost to Prop 3. Prop 3 beat him out at the polls by 791,000 votes. Okay, and Prop 2 not far behind that. So you know, Prop 3 passed 67-33. Prop 2 passed 61-39. So you can see there's, you know, it's still hundreds of thousands of more than 500,000 votes compared to their best running candidate. Mm-hmm. So they know that this isn't what the people want. And the question is, are the people who have been saying, "Oh, voting doesn't matter," going to look at this and say, "Well, you know, look, we voted and now they're doing all of this stuff and, oh, see, voting doesn't matter"? Or are they going to say, "Hey, voting matters because they're making such a fuss about it"? Mm-hmm. And if we get out there and get enough people voting so that we can overcome the gerrymandering, so that we can overcome that, because, I mean, this past election, we had about a 58% turnout in Michigan. That's still 42% of people that could vote that aren't voting. Mm-hmm. If we had another 5% or maybe 10%, I think there's a good chance that that we wouldn't be in this situation. So I think we need to use what's going on right now to make the argument to people, look, if voting didn't matter, they wouldn't be trying to keep you away from it so much.
Yeah. Like in North Carolina, they wouldn't be literally trying to steal your vote.
That's right.
Steal something that's completely invaluable.
So. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, and I think one big thing is that we need to make sure that people know that voting isn't enough anymore. When we're in, this is a war. This isn't just, you know, politics as usual. It's worse. Mm-hmm. It's bad. Just a quick plug, WeThePeopleMI.org. WeThePeople is a Michigan-based organization that is focusing on making sure that we are paying attention in the lame duck and actually doing things about it. So if you'd like to get involved over the next week or two while we are fighting the GOP during the lame duck session, go to WeThePeopleMI.org.
Yeah, definitely check that out. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of information there that that will help you find out where you can where you can go or what you can do to help fight back against these, this, you know, ridiculous authoritarian power grab. But also, I mean, like I just got to say this again. When you have an elected body that is elected, that the majority of whom have been elected by a minority of the people, okay, this is what we're objecting to in this lame duck, right? Is that an accurate thing? The legislature is elected; has been elected by a minority of the people, and they're still trying to make decisions for the people. Let me just point out that's exactly what happens in the federal Senate all the time, because 17% of the population elect 52 senators. It's the same thing that it's the same thing that happens in the Electoral College, you know, where like Zach said earlier, you know, twice in the last
five elections,
twice in the last five elections, 40%. Yeah, we've had the loser, you know, in the election actually be installed in the White House. Mm-hmm. And how is that done? It's done by exactly the same kind of power grab that the legislature in Michigan is trying to do now, but it was done by the founders in the original Constitution. Mm-hmm. Okay, and let's be clear. If you read Federalist 10, when they talk about why they instituted the Electoral College, it was specifically because they wanted to ensure minority rule of wealthy white men.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. It's we're trying to move toward democracy, but there's some hiccups on the way.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, to me, this, like Kelly said, this is a war and there are casualties. People are dying because of the malfeasance in government that we're seeing from groups of representatives that do not represent the people. They only represent a small minority of the people. And
not even that. Like, right. Really, they're not representing a... Republicans aren't really... Republican legislators aren't really representing Republican people.
No.
I've talked to people in the GOP that said that the most amazing thing and the thing that they're most proud of is getting poor white folks to vote against their own interests. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, the GOP doesn't work for anybody but their donors. And if you go talk to your legislature, your legislators that are Republican legislators, they will tell you, I agree with you on some of these issues, but there's nothing I can do. They all fall in line. And while you see that a lot on the Democratic side, where they all just fall in line, like we've seen a lot going on this week, we still at least have those factions of people. You know, one good progressive that has been leading the charge this week has been Rep. Yusuf Rabi, who's been on the show, I think,
before. Yeah. He's in January. He's gonna be the minority leader in the House, Michigan State House. I was talking to him at the Capitol. I was at the Capitol this Tuesday when there was the big protest. There were a lot of people there, making a lot of noise, and that was really awesome. And he was telling me about, you know, there's a number of bills that aren't necessarily, you know, top line stuff that we're talking about right here, but that are bad bills that the current leadership, he becomes minority leader in January, that the current leadership has sort of like negotiated, well, you know, we'll do a little bit, make it a little bit less bad, but then we'll vote for it. And like, you know, we need people in that chamber who are going to stand up and fight, not just sort of twiddle around the edges. It's just not enough.
Yeah. And going along to get along it's not working anymore. We need to, like I said, this is a war. We need to be fighting for people's lives. The people that we elected should be out there fighting for us, but it seems like they are just waiting on their next political agenda for their own personal purposes and, you know, just falling in line for their donors or their party. And that's not working for us. And we need to start paying attention to who our elected officials are being bought out by and who their donors are, and make sure that those people are the people that are going to be representing us, or they're not taking money from special interest groups. They're only taking money from us. Or we could just go right around it, do another ballot initiative, and make it so we have public financing of elections so we wouldn't have to deal with this shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that public financing of elections would be good. I think that there are some other we could talk about. We'd have to do a whole show on reforms that would make a significant difference in terms of, you know, changing.
Yeah.
I'm sure that we will do that. Actually, I'm sure that we will do that and have some of you guys back for that as well. Are there any particular specific bills that you guys want to talk about? I mean, we talked a little bit about, you know, the Prop 2 redistricting reform. We talked a little bit about Prop 3, where they're trying to, you know, make it more difficult for, you know, people to be registered. Prop 3, which passed by a higher margin than anything else this midterm. I'm sorry, that's not true. There are some gerrymandered districts where they're gerrymandered to the point that one or the other party gets like 87%
of
the vote or something like that. And you can look at the shape, and it's like, you know, they built that specifically. But aside from that, Prop 3, you know, making it easier to vote, automatic voter registration and same day voter registration, that passed, like I said, 67-33. They're trying to screw with that. We talked about taking away supervision of elections, taking that away from the Secretary of State, because that's going to be a Democrat now. We talked a little bit about we didn't talk about the Attorney General yet.
Yeah.
What they're doing with that. Do you want to talk about that?
how they're trying to make it so where that the Republican legislators can intervene in cases, which
right.
will affect a number of things, really. I know the one of the leading ones is the adoption issue,
right.
where Dana Nessel has pledged and promised to make it so where same-sex couples can adopt in Michigan.
Well, right, and the thing that's happening with the legislation here is that under the state constitution, the attorney general decides has prosecutorial discretion to decide mm-hmm. which things the attorney general is going to go after and which things the attorney general is going to defend if somebody else brings a suit against the state, and that's prosecutorial discretion is a. Is one of the things that is common across our legal system, that the prosecutors look at the situation and make a determination about whether or not this is a reasonable claim and has a reasonable chance of success in court, et cetera, and then makes the decision one way or the other. And what the Republican legislature wants to do is say, no, you know, we don't trust the attorney general. We're going to take that power away from the attorney general, despite the fact that she won a majority of the vote.
Yeah, which
despite
is, like the fact said, that it's basically saying we don't trust the people.
Right, we don't trust the people. That's right. That's exactly what it is. And what they're going to and we want to spend the people's money to defend the things that we, elected by a minority, think ought to be defended. So they talk about being fiscally responsible. This isn't fiscally responsible. This is, we're going to spend a lot of money because we think that we ought to have this power, despite the fact that the people said, no, you don't get to do that.
Right. Right. That's not what we elected you to do, and what's the point of electing an attorney general if they don't have the power to do their job?
Right. Or the things that they're trying to do with Line 5, where mm-hmm. they're trying to take
the tunnel,
yeah.
which passed both right. the State House and right. State Senate. So
they're trying to put it into a committee of them.
Yeah. So they're right. Right. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to put it under the Mackinac Bridge Authority, which the people on that authority stood up and said, we don't want this. We don't have the capacity for it. We're not interested in doing it. It's way outside of our scope. Don't do this. But when we talk about the Republicans in the state legislature serving their donors over the people, let's remember that that tunnel is owned by a foreign corporation, and that actually not the tunnel, but the pipeline, Line 5, is owned by a foreign corporation. And what they're doing is they're shoving a bill through our government that would spend our money, $4.5 million of it, to help the bottom line of a foreign corporation.
Mm-hmm.
That's known for the largest inland oil spill in U.S. history, which happened
like what
in Kalamazoo,
other
Michigan.
Argument
in
could
Kalamazoo,
you have?
Michigan, right?
What
right.
other argument could you have for that besides my donors need this, or right. I'm going to get a job out of it?
That's right. That's
that
right.
Another crazy one is the bottle bill
right.
repeal, trying to take away our bottle return fees, and that is just. No one is marching in the streets saying, take away our bottle deposit fees. If anything, it helps people who are in lower income situations
mm-hmm.
and helps them to go back and get some money.
Keeps our state clean.
And keeps our state clean. And the only people that aren't, like somebody, one of the legislators that are bringing this to the floor said, oh, well, you know, if we get rid of this fee, then people will recycle more.
Yeah, because that's really likely.
The logic of that is insane.
Just, right. I mean,
insane.
Even
if you're rich
right.
and you don't care about taking the bottles back because it's too demanding for you and you're too busy or you're too bougie and rich to be able to need to do that.
Yeah, I think about all the kids that do fundraisers. Yeah.
There's the kids that do fundraisers for that. I know I did that. I walked mm-hmm. around to people's houses asking
sure.
for bottles for cheerleading back in mm-hmm. middle school
sure.
and things like that. But also, like, yeah, you might throw it in the trash, but if you are so concerned about recycling and that is your motive, then just freaking recycle it. Like, nobody's going to be upset that you recycled a bottle instead of took it back for money.
Right. The people that's going to hurt are the people are some of the poorest people who actually, I mean, I've seen, you know, people that, you know, collect bottles on the side of the street because they need the money because, you know, our economy sucks largely because capitalism doesn't really work for everybody. It only works for the 1%.
Exactly.
And so this is another way of taking a little bit of money away from people who don't who already don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
While making our roads and our environment more filthy.
Right.
And the puppy mill bill. Really? Really?
I haven't actually read that much about this one. Do you know what the...
I haven't done a ton of research on it, but nobody's fighting for puppy mills. Nobody's fighting for this. Like, the... Any... If the ASPCA is against it, it's a problem. Come on. This isn't some kind of, like, PETA situation where people get a little worked up and think that, you know, PETA's too much and they're just throwing a tantrum over somebody eating, like, chewing gum or something. No, this is an actual problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess if you don't care about anybody but wealthy elite human beings, you're probably not going to care too much about these puppies. But come on. Nobody's fighting for these things. I don't know why they're pushing their limits on these for no reason except for their donors.
Donors.
It comes down to all that it comes down to.
I mean, there's the wetlands bill as well. That was one of them.
Maybe we should just stop talking about anything else except for getting public financing in elections, because it seems like everything comes back to that.
Yeah, I mean,
if you ask why, it's always follow the money.
It does seem to always be follow the money. We've talked a lot about problems with the Republican legislature, and with we talked a little bit about problems with the Democratic leadership currently in the House. Hopefully, we'll be getting some more progressive leadership when Yusuf Rabi takes the lead there in January. Let's talk a little bit about the Democratic Party, because there's something coming up that we need people to know about, which is that on February 2nd, the Democratic Party is going to have hold its state convention, where new leadership will be elected across all congressional districts, and for the State Central Committee and the chair of the party, chair of caucuses, vice chairs, treasurers, etc. I just want to plug, I want to make sure that people know, young people especially are really energized right now to move the culture left. And one of the strategies for that is moving the Democratic Party left. It's not the only strategy. We also need a lot of other stuff that's not directly in the Democratic Party. But moving the Democratic Party left would help. We have more progressive Democrats taking higher and higher leadership roles. And I want to emphasize to younger people out there, you can join the Democratic Party when you're 16 years old, and you can vote with the exact same voting power as anybody else in the party.
Maybe we should get a 16-year-old to run for MDP chair.
Well,
it's 100K a year, kids.
Well, it's 100K a year if you can raise that, because a big part of the chair's job is actually raising money, from what I understand. Which is an issue, because we have campaign finance problems in the Democratic Party. I would say as bad as in the Republican Party. There's a lot of people that won't like me saying it that way, but let's be honest, we have a lot of those kinds of problems in the Democratic Party, and they're not going to go away unless we fight them.
Mm-hmm. Just like change the culture, change the leadership.
That's right. That's right. We change the culture in a lot of different ways. Sometimes in the party, you find it's hard even to raise objections or ask questions, because people are so much of the opinion that, well, you know, the leadership says this, and we can't attack the leadership for some reason, and they take it as an attack. I said attack there. That's actually the culture affecting me. I don't think it's an attack when I ask a question like, where did this money come from? Mm-hmm. You know, we've had a lot of problems on the State Central Committee of the Democratic Party over the last 2 years, where it's interesting. The State Central Committee, the bylaws literally say that the party cannot even open a bank account without the State Central Committee saying so. But when we ask for an audit of what's going on, we're told that we're going to get one, and it takes months to get. And we get back with the audit. What do we get? We get a half page that basically says, hey, I was the auditor, and everything looks good.
Right.
It doesn't really, I mean, that's
it's a summary of an audit.
Right. It's more like a note. Hey, I took a look at everything's right. Fine. Just, you know, we should just, you know, trust that. Well, you know, maybe it is fine. But you know what? If there's no transparency, then we can't know that. And if you're going to criticize us for making that point, then I'm sorry. The problem is you didn't have the transparency in the first place.
Right. And who's looking after this? The COO mm-hmm. and the chair. Mm-hmm. So two people at the top mm-hmm. making, you know, six figures mm-hmm. are the only two people that have any control over this, have any power to be able to see what's going on, who's donating, what kind of backroom deals are actually happening. That just seems ridiculous to me. Have you heard of who anybody that is planning on running? I heard LaVor is planning.
I heard LaVor, which would be a continuation of the exact policies and culture and leadership that we have now.
The other person I've heard that's running, I know that for a while Adam Zemke was saying that he was going to run, but I've heard, but I believe he's not. But I've heard recently that he's not. I actually need to reach out to him and see what's going on there. But the other person that has announced is Lisa Dorado. She's
from
the
Northville?
She's the vice chair of the 11th district, if I recall correctly.
Okay.
Pretty sure that's the case. I've heard that she's talking about about transparency, and I know that she has previously challenged Democratic Party leadership. So that seems. Positive, but I need to know a lot more about what her positions are, and if there's anybody else running. I don't know if it's
they have to announce before December 2nd, correct?
They have
to
announce
the rules. Of the
the new rules that we just approved this past March 17th, after a year of negotiation on them. But it was a good package that moved us forward significantly. So. Props to everybody who participated in that, including the people that I had vehement disagreements with. That was a good package of reforms. There's a lot more needed, but that was a really solid package. But according to that package of reforms, for congressional district chairs and chairs of and the chair of the party and other high party positions, you have to announce a month before the election. Some details that are listed in the rules to the state party.
Yep.
And those rules, by the way, are in fact on the MDP website. That's good. I wanted to circle back for a moment and say, if you're 16 years old or older on February 2nd. You can join the party before you can join the party and be able to vote on February 2nd if you want to be involved in helping to move the party in a direction that you find better than what you're seeing. I personally want to see the party move farther left, but if you're 16 years old or any age above that and you want to see it move a different direction, come on in.
Mm-hmm.
emphasizing, by the way, you do not have to spend a dime to join the party. You do have to download the application. If you don't want to spend any money on it, you have to download the application. You have to fill it out by hand. You have to return it to party headquarters in Lansing, either by mail or by hand. There's a place where you can just say how much you're contributing, and it can be zero. You can contribute more if you want, but it doesn't have to be anything. It doesn't say that on the form, but that's what it says in the rules.
Yeah.
So people should know
that's
that.
Right.
So Anything else on that at the moment? I think we're gonna do a bit more of an episode on the rules and the party elections as well. But it's good to note where we are on that at the moment. Anything else on any of that?
No. Just make sure that you are registered or re-registered. You have to do it every year. Make sure you're registered by January 2nd.
Correct.
And then. Yeah, make sure that everybody who knows registered. So you can make sure that more people show up.
Right.
There's more of a voice on the MDP.
Absolutely. Just to give one final point of that, just to give an example, right now in Washtenaw County, where I'm from, there are about, according to the census numbers I looked up, there's about just under 400,000 people, 370,000 people in Washtenaw County. There's just about 1,000 people that are members of the party in Washtenaw County. Okay. And there's after the push that primarily progressives have made over the last 2 years, the party's gone from somewhere around 10 or 12,000 members, maybe 14. I believe it's up to something like 20 at the moment.
Wow.
I haven't looked at it. It might be 18 to 20 somewhere in there. But again, to vote, you have to come to Cobo Hall on February 2nd, and there's a lot of people that aren't able to do that. So we need to make sure that we have people registered and helping people to get there so that we can have a voice in our party.
Yeah, good transportation, carpooling and such.
Right. I'm sure that there will be groups setting that up.
All right. Yep. So I know this is a topic that everyone's been avoiding for like last year because we've had the midterms. But
right.
2020 is coming around the corner and candidates are gearing up.
Yeah.
So anyone got thoughts on that?
Well, who's announced so far? We have Richard Ojeda.
Yeah, I think there's only been two announcements officially on the Democratic side. Andrew Yang and Richard Ojeda.
And he's specifically Ojeda, not Ojeda, which is the way that you wouldn't pronounce it in Spanish, which
right.
I thought was interesting. And I saw him make a point about that, you know, which, I don't know, that's an interesting point. I don't know exactly what to think about that specifically, but I thought it was interesting.
He's interesting. So what kind of blows my mind is that he's good on a lot of issues. He's really good on, like, workers' rights issues and things like that. He was awesome with the teachers. What confuses me is why he would vote for Donald Trump. I mean, don't get me wrong. Everybody gets to vote for whoever they want to vote for. But you're running as a Democrat and you voted for Donald Trump. It'd be one thing if you voted further to the left or just wrote somebody in or anything else. But what?
Well, I don't know. I have you heard what his reasoning is? Has he said anything about
it's
it?
Basically, the cool stuff.
Yeah, it's essentially Hillary Clinton coming in saying she's going to get rid of coal jobs without offering up alternatives or alternative strategies on how to replace those jobs. And that's kind of like more or less his reasoning is that he wanted to stand behind coal workers and workers in general.
Okay, but is he saying that he bought the idea that Trump was going to bring coal back? Because that's a problem for me. If he bought that argument, that's just telling me that he doesn't believe in science and he doesn't understand how the economy works.
It wasn't necessarily that he bought into the argument as much as it was he was the only one offering something. It was his argument. However, I disagree with that.
At the end of the day,
I'm not
not going to be able to get the support. So I think that he's not a serious candidate.
I don't think
and
that.
And not to mention, you just lost a congressional race.
That's true.
And if you can't even win in your own state, how are you going to win?
He did, in the country, move the, from 2016, he moved his election results, he moved them the most of any district. His district went 40-plus points for Trump, and he only ended up losing by, I believe, 12 or something like that. So he did move the district considerably.
And then still lost by double digits.
Based on Trump numbers, I don't think are exactly representative. negative.
No.
Because, I mean, you could say the same thing about the district up in the UP. That was a special election that we had last year. People were saying, oh, well, this district went to Trump by over 20 points. Yeah, but it's always been a blue district. It's always been held by a blue state.
Compared it to an outsider year. That makes sense.
Right. There are some districts that split like that between presidential and other, and other offices. I can imagine that he thinks maybe there's some way that he could win, from his perspective. Maybe he sees the Democrats as a lot more discombobulated than I think they actually are. I mean, I think there's a lot of problems in the party, but I don't think that they're at the point that somebody in his position will have a significant chance of winning at the convention.
I don't see that at all.
I think he'll be one of the unless he's stubborn about it, I think he'll be one of the early dropouts. I think Andrew Yang might also be one of the same.
Andrew Yang,
I love his platform.
I think he's running a similar campaign to like Sinich, how Sinich ran on getting money out of politics.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Yang has made universal basic income a huge part of his platform, which I think is smart and is going to be part of the conversation in 2020, especially as we see the layoffs in GM and the continued layoffs. I mean, not just in GM, but retail, I mean, countless industries.
I think there's I always liked the idea, but I had some problems with how it would actually work out in a dynamic system. I'm still studying that, but Richard Wolff makes an interesting argument where he said he'd rather have worker co-ops than universal basic income. And I'm still studying that, but I think it's something that people should really look into. Richard Wolff is an economist educated at Harvard, Stanford, and Yale, and critiques capitalism. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just be clear. If you're not willing to have somebody critique capitalism or critique any particular model that you might have, then you don't believe in science, because that's how science proceeds. It's that you have a model, you examine how it matches up to the real world, and then with the data from the real world, looking at the data, then you critique the model to try to find a model that fits the real world better. So if you can't, if your system of economics or government can't stand critique, then you're trying to pull the wool over somebody's eyes.
Right.
Okay.
I also find it very fascinating on his attempt to rebrand the idea of universal basic income. So one of the successful things that Bernie Sanders was able to do is he was able to rebrand single payer as Medicare for All.
Mm-hmm.
And made it more palatable to voters and easier concept for people to grasp. One of the things that Andrew Yang is doing with universal basic income is he has rebranded it as Social Security for All.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great.
Which is just expanded Social Security instead of for the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
It's for everyone.
Right.
So I think that's very interesting.
So speaking of Bernie, do you think that he's actually going to run? I mean, there's been speculation back and forth. There's a lot of progressives thinking he's going to run.
I mean, Jeff Weaver, his campaign manager and longtime friend, is posting basically a draft Bernie type website that has been put together by a lot of his former staff. He's been gearing up for this since 2016. I honestly believe that. He fell in line, took it pretty well, overall, especially compared to a lot of his supporters. Me included.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you were one of his earliest supporters. You set up a Bernie website here in Michigan. I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact name. What was it called?
Michigan for Bernie.
When did you set that up originally?
March of 2015.
Okay.
It was a month or so before you announced?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, and you worked for his campaign across a number of different states. So So your position here is from somebody who's worked that hard from the first time. So what do you you think?
Do you think it'll be similar or different than the last election?
It's going to be completely different. If Bernie runs, which I think that he will, I think that he showed that when he was going traveling around. I mean, obviously, of course, he was trying to support Democrats and get people excited and out to vote for Democrats. But I think that that was also a quick run around the entire country to get everybody ramped up and saying, hey, don't forget, we're coming. Right. Feel the burn is back.
So would you, at this point, declare Bernie the front runner of the race, or would you say that another candidate fills that role?
I think so. I think a lot of people say Biden, though. I think Biden's going to run. I think Kamala Harris is going to run from California. I think Cory Booker is going to run.
What about Beto? Do you think Beto's
going to run? I think Beto is going to run. I think so. Beto is going to split some of that progressive vote. I think that if Elizabeth Warren runs, she's going to split some of that progressive vote. So we're going to see splits on both sides, like the more centrist and establishment Democrats compared to the more progressives that we're going to see running. But I think that at the end of the day, most people are probably going to stick with Bernie just because he has that track record. He didn't just switch over and decide to stop taking corporate money. He's been doing that all along. He didn't just decide to start fighting for workers' rights. He's been doing that all along. He didn't decide to just start fighting for healthcare for everyone. He's been doing that all along. So people know he has that track record of standing up for the people. And I think that that really is what got people excited and ignited before. I think that he's going to have a leg up this time because now he actually has name recognition, which is great. Mm-hmm. But I think that that might deter people because it's going to be less of an uphill battle than it was before. And I think that that might weaken the grassroots, because before we had something to fight for and we had a strong opposition. It was like the, you know, David and Goliath type situation.
Right.
But I don't think our David is going to be as strong because our Goliath has name recognition now, and our Goliath has people that are actually standing with him now that weren't before. So,
a lot of people talked about in 2018, the blue wave, something that was kind of less talked about is the pink wave, the fact that so many women triumphed in 2018.
In Michigan.
Even nationally, that carried
through. But not as much.
Not as much. Michigan was...
Took it for the women. Represent.
But my point being, do you think that will play an influence in 2020 in terms of some of the Joe Biden, Bernie, and Beto? Do you think the white male will struggle in 2020 due to that cultural shift?
I think so. I mean, as a woman, I'm sick and tired of straight white men being at the front of everything. But also, as a woman, I want to know that whoever that person is that's going to be running things is going to be somebody that's going to be a democratic type person, that's going to actually care about the will of the people, that's going to care about the workers, that's going to actually make a difference for working families. And I don't think that people are just going to blindly trust just anybody. And I think that primary voters specifically pay more attention to the minute things like that, like where's your money coming from, who supports you, why do they support you, what have you done recently, what have you done over the long term, and what are you going to do for me in the future, because people are done with broken promises.
I think there's going to be a lot of fight over this, because there are still a lot of people in the Democratic Party that are terrified of Bernie and hate him. I don't say that hyperbolically. I have heard people tell me this.
He's not a real Democrat, right?
Yeah, that's for example what they say.
Off a porch with somebody saying that once. Thanks, Harrisburg.
Yeah. I think that there is going to be an aspect of the David and Goliath, and I also think that there's a sort of like a rematch narrative, and the rematch narrative is progressives and, you know, and establishment? And are we going to have a fair, transparent, accountable, democratic process in the party at all levels? Or are we going to have the kind of stuff that we had last time where you had lawyers for the DNC arguing in court that the party doesn't actually have to run a fair, transparent, and democratic process, even according to their own bylaws, that are supposedly set out to create that, which they're not.
Fine. We're not bitter.
Cigar filled. No. Let me be clear. I'm not bitter at all.
I am.
I understand that, but some people are. But I think it's important to make. I make the distinction. Look. If this is the way that you want to play the game, and let me put it this way, if you want to play a game rather than actually have a functioning party, that's on the establishment. Okay. Right. They're saying they want to play a game rather than having a functional democratic party, that does things transparently and democratically and fairly. And if that's not the party that they want to have, we saw that they weren't interested in that last time. We'll see if they're interested in it now. And we should go in with eyes open, saying, looking at them straight in the eye and saying, are you ready to do this actually, you know, by the rules and fairly and democratically and not screw around with it?
Well, on a positive note, they have made an announcement that they'll be doing debates more frequently and at better times, so we won't have to, like, two debates at midnight and on a Saturday when a football game's
and
on.
They start the first debate, you know, after New York can no longer change their party affiliations for the primary election.
June, actually, so 2019 is when they're thinking the first debates will be, so that'd be very interesting.
Yeah. And it's more than last time, still less than 2008.
But. And they're also thinking about lowering the threshold to get into the debates as well, to allow for more people and to try to not shun out mm-hmm. candidates that will have a tougher time or don't mm-hmm. have as much name recognition, mm-hmm. which I think is a step in the right direction.
Because so. Last time, what, it was 1% you had to...
1% and three national polls, I think, mm-hmm. is what it was.
So, yeah, no, there are certainly positive signs, including, by the way, what I talked about before is the changes that we're able to get in the state party here in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And there are
DNC reforms that they passed.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. We're going to be talking about this more in future episodes as we get closer into it. But for right now, we've got to wrap up. So thanks, guys, for coming by, and hope to have you both back on soon. Kelly Collison, chair of the Michigan Democratic Party Progressive Caucus, and Zachary Reinhart from Millennials for Revolution.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks very much. Thanks for listening. That's all for this episode. If you don't already, you can help support this show on Patreon. Your monthly contribution of $5 or more will give you access to bonus content like extended episodes and exclusive one-on-one interviews with special guests. Find us at patreon.com/Michigan Progressive. State of the Revolution is a production of Michigan Progressive. Our director and editor is Benjamin Klein. Our producers are Sam Pernick, Mara Zumberg, and Eric Kester. Our music is composed by Benjamin Klein. I'm Leon O'Sharon. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with another episode soon.